Hello, everyone. I'm Justin Walker, and I'm now retired. But in my lifetime, I've dabbled in the military. I've dabbled in industry, and been involved in local newspaper. And then for the last 30 years, I've been researching the deep state or the globalists. And I have helped co-found with Sir Julian Rose an organization called the Hardwick Alliance for Real Ecology, which spells hare. And we are basically, what we're about is exposing the fake green agenda, the World Economic Forum's Great Reset, and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And we are trying to get people to take seriously their constitution, their common law constitution, and to take back their powers from the elite. There we are. I think that sums it up.
Justin, for anyone listening, is hare something that they can support, get involved with, come along to meetings, that sort of thing?
Well, we're basically a think tank. We always joke that we're the complete opposite to Bilderberg, because we're open, we're transparent, and everyone can see what we're doing. But we are an invited, there's two aspects. We have an annual meeting for the Hardwick Group once a year, where about 30 people come together, are all networkers, and we basically we devise a strategy for exposing the globalists, and we always take minimum resources, maximum effect. We like to find ways of damaging the globalists without committing too much in the way of resources. We have a forum, and if you go to our website, it's the Hardwick Alliance for Real Ecology. I think it's the hardwickalliance.org is the website. We've also got another website that has sprung off from that, which is the commonlawconstitution.org.
Okay. Do you want to say something about this difference between, because I mean, I always thought of myself as an environmentalist, as well as, you know, my Christian spiritual faith. I worked very closely with a guy called George Monbiot, who I also thought was an environmentalist back in the 1990s with this group, The Land Is Ours. I was pretty shocked when he came out in The Guardian just after the Fukushima disaster as pro-nuclear. So can you say something about this whole business of the sort of fake and the real greens?
It's a very interesting one, Tony. I joined the Ecology Party back in 1978. I was inspired by the French oceanographer Jacques Cousteau, who told people, especially young people, to take up politics for the environment and to work to persuade politicians to look after the planet and not to destroy it. It was rather naive, I suppose, but that's going back an awful long time. And the first Green Party was in New Zealand. That was called the Values Party. And in those days, we genuinely had values and principles. We believed in human-scale economics. We wanted to care for the planet, care for other peoples on the world. We believed more in cooperation rather than competition. We wanted to help stop poverty. We were very naive in some respects, but on the other hand, we had genuine spiritual values. I went to a wonderful thing in Assisi in about 1979, I think it was, on behalf of the Ecology Party, and it was a coming together of all the different faiths in the spirit of St. Francis of Assisi to protect the planet. And you felt that the whole place was, you were doing it for truth. You were doing it for the right reasons. Everything about it seemed jolly good. However, I witnessed in the, how many years was I in the, 15 years I was in the Ecology Party, which changed its name to the Green Party. And in that time, I saw professional politicians move in. And I think the worst thing I ever saw was when a Green Party representative was wearing a suit and tie, looking just like any of the other political parties. And of course, what's happened today is that the green agenda has been hijacked by the bankers, by the elitists, and by those who meet at the World Economic Forum and elsewhere. And as a result of that, we've got the climate change scam. I know it's a scam because back in 1982, because of my uncle, I met the founder, the co-founder of the Club of Rome, Aurelio Pecce, and unknown to me, he'd already spoken to my uncle, he was going to recruit me to go and work for the Club of Rome as a political researcher. And when he offered me the job, and I was a bit taken aback because I didn't know it was a job interview, he said to me, you'll be joining us at a very exciting time. We are creating a huge environmental problem that will frighten people into wanting a world government run by us. Now, at the time, I thought it was brilliant because I thought when he said us, I thought he meant good people in the world like Jacques Cousteau and all the others coming together to basically help the planet. As it was, I didn't take up his job offer, only because I was in the Territorial Army. I was in the Green Party, as I said. I had a responsible position in the Green Party. And I also had a new girlfriend at the time. So I decided that I wasn't going to go and work in Rome. But it was interesting to to meet the guy and to hear what he had to say. And
the Club of Rome is quite an interesting one, isn't it? And it also seems to me a bit like the Treaty of Rome. The idea is that this is a code word for a kind of recreation of this vast empire from centuries ago. I mean, it's interesting you talk about them because one of the people that George Monbiot brought along to our land occupation in 1996, and the land is ours in Wandsworth, was a chap called Herbie Girardet. I'd never heard of him before. He said, oh, Herbie's great, you know, he's wonderful. Well, it turns out that he is he was Club of Rome too, and also something called the World Future Council. So these people have set up their own NGOs for a kind of world, I mean, globalists really, for a world government. And, yeah. You know, one can argue that it's a good idea to have something like a United.
I was taken in by it. I'll tell you on. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was brilliant to have people thinking on a global scale. And of course, the Green Party did develop that slogan, think globally, act locally. So I had no problems at that time with people wanting to have a global strategy for the planet. I thought it seemed eminently sensible. But of course, gradually, I started to discover who the people were who had these global ideas.
Well, I mean, with your present group, what do you make of this whole business of the rewilding? What are they actually doing? Because I noticed there's lots of government people like English Nature, the local wildlife trusts, all seem to be pulling together towards a similar goal. And in fact, here in the Somerset Levels, they are actually talking about reflooding the levels, which of course is very nerve-wracking for people who live there. And they're also there is also an enormous program of these mega cities being built at the same time. So, what's your take, if you can? In a nutshell,
they're trying to create a society that's going to be either vegan or eating insects. Let's not kid ourselves. They're looking at intensive arable growing of food in artificial conditions, in effectively factories, and breeding insects.
Well, there's a lot of people that look at, say, for example, battery farm chickens, industrial agriculture. And
oh, yeah. No. I'm no lover of industrialized farming. I believe in small, medium-sized mixed farms, family-owned farms, who've been doing it for generations, who know their land and who know how to get the best from their land at the same time as helping wildlife. There is a way to be compatible between protection of wildlife and growing your own food and organic farming. And this is where Sir Julian Rose is a champion, the individual I started the Hardwick Alliance of Real Ecology. He was one of the very first big organic farmers in the country. And he's now got a 900-acre estate at Hardwick, which is being converted into lots of cooperatives, organic cooperatives, forestry, arable, dairy, and he leads by example.
Well, fantastic. I mean, this is what we need, isn't it? Now, look, the reason I actually got you on this week, Justin, was none of this, but, you know, obviously it's so important for people to see the bigger picture. We've got a king now. who is part of the World Economic Forum. He's one of the main instigators, and you know, one would imagine he's helping to fund it too, because of he has a lot of strings he can pull in terms of, as we found out, with big suitcases full of cash and things like that. It's King Charles. So I know you've been looking ahead to the coronation in May.
Yeah,
quite an interesting event, haven't you?
Well, this is let me run through. First of all, Prince Charles, as he was then, was a strong advocate, and probably still is a strong advocate, for small, medium-sized farms. And I know he had particular support for the hill farmers up in the Lake District. And I, when I worked for a local newspaper, I met farmers who had actually put him up for the night and found him to be absolutely delightful. And we know he looks after rural crafts, rural communities. That's what we're told. And he apparently has these interests. However, he is supporting something, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, the Green New Deal, which is a complete antithesis. It's the complete opposite to what he apparently believes in. So he is there at the forefront of the Great Reset, which is bringing in, of course, digital ID, central bank digital currencies, social credit schemes, artificial intelligence on steroids. It can lead to transhumanism. I mean, what we see being rolled out in communist China is going to be rolled out here, digital enslavement. So what on earth is going on? Because that man has supposedly spiritual values, you know, and Julian introduced him to organic farming. This is the thing I don't understand, Tony. How can a king who supports the things that we believe in can be the public figure for the Great Reset, which is bringing in a digital tyranny? Now, at the coronation, he has to take something called the coronation oath. Now, we've not had one for 70 years. So it's a bit of history for people. They don't know what the coronation oath is. Well, most of it is to do with protecting the Church of England. But the first bit of it is all about protecting the laws and customs of our land. And the laws and customs are the common law. We are a common law country. And what does that mean? A common law country is where you have trial by jury. It means where you have a jury of your peers deciding whether you are innocent or guilty. But we're not even being told what a common law constitution entails. Magna Carta 1215 makes it quite plain that you are entitled to a trial by jury of your peers. But what we're not told is that the people can adjudge the legislation being used to prosecute. So in other words, if the politicians come up with statutes and acts, the people can actually overturn those statutes and act by finding somebody not guilty of doing something under a particular, you know, statute. So in other words, they adjudge the actual law, the rule of society being used. And if they're not happy with it, if they think it's unjust and not workable, they can actually find the individual not guilty with the recommendation to annul that legislation and start the process to annul that legislation. That means we have a complete check over our politicians. That means the politicians are kept in their box, if you like. And the monarch also has the right to not give royal assent. If, you know, it's not automatic. You know, when they say an act being passed, the king then gives his assent to that bill, so it becomes an act, etc. No, a king can refuse royal assent if he genuinely, or she, if it's a queen, believes that the people's rights and ancient rights and privileges...
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Justin, but the opposite has been the case. Rob Evans at The Guardian has done a fantastic job over the last probably 10 years, including this stuff about the black spider letters, in uncovering Prince Charles, when he was Prince's, interference in laws. So he's basically he's got his staff going through every new law that's about to be enacted, and certain clauses that might affect him get removed, certain clauses which exempt him get added, you know. So he's been doing
well. I don't know. I think he's obviously doing that behind the scenes. It's not a public action.
He had been until Rob Evans in The Guardian exposed the fact that, you know, Charles has actually been altering laws before they get enacted in order to make sure. So, for example,
one of his the last time there was
You know,
the last official time,
Duchy of Cornwall may have to pay more tax. He will write in an exemption to the law in it.
Yeah, but the last official time that the royal assent was not given was in the reign of Queen Anne, 1708, to stop a Scottish militias bill from going through.
It is. They're not giving assent. What they're doing is they're adding clauses, taking away clauses.
Oh, yeah. No. I think you're probably correct. What goes on? What is happening, Tony, is everything is no longer transparent, no longer accountable.
Well, for example, all the dealings from the Freedom of Information Act were supposed originally to include anything that was affecting the government that was involved royals. Charles has now managed to get himself exempted, and the royalty exempted from the Freedom of Information Act, citing national security, and largely because of people like Rob Evans and the Daily Mail, actually using the FOI to show what people like him and his staff are up to behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, as I said, I am no lover of the current Royal House of Windsor, or more accurately, the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. And they only changed their name to Windsor when Gopher bombers were dropping bombs on London in 1917. So I am no lover of the Royal House of Saxe, Coburg and Gopher. And if he takes his coronation oath under God and he says he's going to protect our laws and customs, which is our common law, but he is a signed up member and launcher of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset, They're two totally incompatible. Something's got to give. So we have written to the Earl Marshal, who is the Duke of Norfolk, who is responsible for the organisation of the coronation, and we have said before he can take that coronation oath with a clear conscience, he has to retract. There's got to be a royal retraction, a formal royal retraction, a proper signed document retracting all his support for the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, the Green New Deal, and every aspect of what the globalists have got planned for us. Now, he's clearly not going to retract. We know that, but it's an open letter, so we're getting people to talk about the Constitution, our common law Constitution, and we're encouraging people to get off their backsides, to actually work for their Constitution, and to get behind what we're doing.
Okay, so how do listeners actually get behind it? I mean, what do you want people to do?
Well, go to commonlawconstitution.org, and you will find the letter in a PDF. You want people to download that PDF and send it to their MPs, saying that they cannot allow the new king to take the coronation oath if he is not going to denounce the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset. Because, as I said, the two are totally incompatible.
Well, I mean, almost like this is Prince Charles's, baby. He's not going to say he doesn't want to do that.
Well, we know that. We're totally realistic. But what this is going to turn into is a massive constitutional crisis, far worse than Edward VIII and Mrs. Simpson, far worse.
Interesting? I mean, this seems to be the way now. The acceleration is to the people that seem to pull a lot of this stuff together. But we've got a support for Ukraine, which actually seems to be creating a bigger crisis than it's supposed to solve. We've got zero carbon, which is creating a bigger crisis than it's supposed to solve. Yeah. We also had zero COVID, which also created a bigger crisis than it's supposed to solve. Do I see a pattern here?
Yes, you do. And some people are saying the globalists are starting to panic a little bit because they're starting to be exposed in greater numbers. I mean, when you've got very articulate people like Neil Oliver talking about things and really stating exactly how things are, how our freedoms are being deteriorated, and how clearly, I mean, one of the things we haven't even discussed is banking and financial matters, which is where I'm usually talking about. The fact is this. Every aspect of the global financial world is in private, unelected and unaccountable hands, where these people meet, the bankers meet, in complete secrecy. Now, I'm sorry, money creation and money supply is the lifeblood of the world, for trade, for business, for communities, everything, and it's been decided upon by people who are unelected, unaccountable, and they operate in the shadows. in total secrecy.
Well, that's interesting.
That cannot be right.
There's a certain chap called Aaron Russo, before he died in the States, who stood to be governor of Nevada, who said exactly that. Anyway, look, just finally, I've got to ask you about Matt Hancock. I mean, we had this incredible story in the... I mean, it's been day after day of absolutely horrific revelations about what was going on during the lockdowns. And the almost a sort of icing on the cake, the cherry on the cake, if you want, was this statement by Matt Hancock that he wanted to deploy a new variant to scare the pants off the public.
Yes, well, as I'm sorry, the caliber of all our politicians. There's one politician, only one politician, who I have any time for, and that's Andrew Bridgen, because he has stuck his head above the parapet. He knows that the vaccine is causing damage to a huge number of people, and he is prepared to stick his head up above the parapet for truth. Matt Hancock, well, I can only say this. There will come a time when he'll be standing in front of a jury with all his other cronies, and they will end up in prison for the rest of their lives.
He said something to that effect, that he wanted some sort of legal protection, didn't he? So that's even he seems to understand that. Bridgen, what about Bridgen? He's been an absolute hero before Christmas. His incredible statement to Parliament, very brave, actually. And so what do you make of him? I know you've been hearing from him recently.
Well, yes, I've had conversations, and obviously I respect his confidentiality, but the one thing that comes out loud and clear, he says that other MPs have been voicing support, but not prepared to go public. And I find that very sad, because one of the worst, to me, cowardice is probably something which, I think it's about the worst sin you can have, not prepared to go where the truth is. And these people, they basically left it all to Andrew on his own. And I find that very sad. He's a great man. He's not at all deterred. He's keeping at it. And I think everyone's got to get behind him. Everyone should send an email off to him, wishing him well, supporting him. He's in a good place. He's in a good mental place. He's up for the fight. He's rolled his sleeves up. He's not giving in. And I think it would be really nice if all your listeners could perhaps, show their support for him, because he's the only decent MP in Parliament. What, there's 650 MPs,
I wouldn't say he's not absolutely the only one. I mean, we were just discussing this in Bristol here yesterday evening, that, we've got a very bad mayor who's actually created a totally dysfunctional council with various of the senior officers feuding with each other, absolutely appalling decisions being made, which are totally contradictory. Our local, which is run by the council, waste company, has just been discovered to be taking bribes from drivers of lorries and this sort of thing, which is a very good indication of the mafia being in there. So I just think, it's quite important, isn't it, to big up the good guys rather than just curse the bad guys.
No, he is. But of the actual MPs, I can't think of one MP. I mean, some of the Tory knights, the Shire knights, did try to say that our lockdown joined, our freedoms were being damaged. But none of them are prepared to support Andrew in what he's doing. And it's interesting, Andrew Bridgen, I hadn't realised this, he was the one man in Parliament who stood up for the post-submistresses and the post-submasters when they were collared by the post office, when it was a computer glitch or an IT problem. But they were accused of robbing thousands of pounds from the post office, and some of them ended up going to prison. Some had their relationships with wives and finished, and they found themselves, in a terrible place. And yet no MP was prepared to stand up for them except Andrew Bridgen. And Andrew Bridgen did stand up for them, and he got justice for them. So this man's got a record for doing what's right. So,
well, funny, they didn't tell us that on the BBC or on Channel 4 News. Anyway, where would you recommend people go to follow some of your work then, Justin?
Apart from our website, I tell you who is doing a very good job at the moment, Richard Vobes. He's doing a great job with his program, his programs every day on a daily basis, all different issues.
Isn't he?
Richard Vobes, he's very good. And of course, whilst GB News is, some of the people on it I wouldn't recommend, but I would certainly recommend Neil Oliver. And also, and Fox, what's his name? First name, Lawrence Fox. And he's doing a great job. And he's also helping the ladies in Wales who are trying to stand up to the Welsh government on sex education for children in the schools and what's being taught there. It's appalling. You know, we're living in a very immoral age at the moment, and things are not good.
Okay, so just to bring it back to the coronation, the letter is actually addressed to, is it the Duke of Norfolk? So what do you think, what do you want people to do with that letter? You want it to
I want people to download that letter off commonlawconstitution.org, and please send it to all your friends, all your work colleagues. Get people aware of the fact that we have a monarch who has got to renounce his involvement with what is effectively what's happening in China, because what's happening in China is now going to be rolled out here. As I said, digital ID, central bank digital currencies, coupled with a social credit scheme, all to do with carbon units. So in other words, if you go down to your butcher's and order a steak, and it's all digital, no cash, cashless society, and you feed your card, and they'll say, no, you can't have that steak because you've met all your carbon units, all your carbon limits have been reached. You know, the whole thing is diabolical, and this is what's being rolled out in China. If you don't like the state and you voice your opinions, you can't travel. They will prevent you from buying rail tickets or air tickets.
You know, and I think what really evil people do is they create systems and hope that the public are lazy enough to go along with them, that those systems will be the instrument of their destruction. And anyway, Justin Walker, thanks ever so much for joining us.
All right, Tony, all the best, mate. And as I said, we live in very interesting times. So the most important thing is, please, everyone, download that letter, get it spread all over the place, send it to your MP, send it to your local councillors, make people realise what is happening.
Thanks, Justin.